This is Side Door, a podcast from the Smithsonian with support from PRX. I'm Lizzie Peabody. It's dawn on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is just waking up, the hum of traffic stirring, joggers shuffling by. And the Smithsonian's Hirshhorn Museum and Sculpture Garden is quiet in the sleepy morning light. But not for long. A woman dressed in bright clothing walks slowly through the sunken garden, singing. Woke up this morning. She circles the entire garden, slowly, deliberately, making eye contact with each person she passes. And when she comes back to where she started, the air is still for just a moment. Until on the southern edge of the garden, we hear drums. Drums join on the east, then the north, and the west. From the four cardinal directions, the drumming echoes off the four walls of the sunken garden. I'm standing in the center with a throng of revelers and art buffs and curious commuters who've gathered in the garden. And as we listen, the drummers begin to move from the edges into the center.
Which was sort of its own crescendo in energy and sound.
Anne Reeve, associate curator at the Smithsonian's Hirshhorn Museum and Sculpture Garden, was there with me in the garden as the drummers closed in.
Being all together with a group of people on the mall as the sun is coming up, listening to this sound, felt incredibly powerful and also ultimately very, very uplifting.
It felt very joyful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we danced. Because it wouldn't be a DC celebration without the city's native sound, go-go music. And that's why we're here, for a celebration. This ceremony, called Wake Up, Liberation Call at Dawn, marks the arrival of a new sculpture to the Smithsonian's Hirshhorn Sculpture Garden by artist Abigail Deville. Hirshhorn director Melissa Chu put it best.
When Abigail Deville asks us all to get up at dawn, we come. Abigail, thank you so much for, in some ways, an awakening.
Abigail Deville is an artist who wants to wake us up, not just at dawn, which, for the record, I did for you, my dear Side Door family, you're welcome, but also to the stories we inherit as a nation. Her sculpture, Light of Freedom, asks us to take another look at American liberty and lifts a lamp to a future where everyone in this country can breathe free. That's coming up after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Abigail DeVille, who are you?
Oh, my God. A Who song just popped into my... Who are you? Who? Lord. Okay. I'm a visual artist.
Abigail DeVille is an accomplished artist.
Hailing from Bronx, New York. What?
She's the sculptor of the latest piece to be installed in the Smithsonian's Hirshhorn Sculpture Garden on the National Mall. And this sculpture does something that sort of boggles my mind.
I mean, it's unlike anything that has been made before, and yet it is still immediately recognizable.
To help me describe it, I have the expert help of the Hirshhorn's own Anne Reeve. Simply put, the sculpture is a torch, a famous one.
In fact, when we were installing the work and Abigail was up on the scaffolding, you know, people were coming by and asking, is that the Statue of Liberty's torch?
Light of Freedom stands at around 13 feet tall, and it's made mostly of metal. The torch is set at a slight angle, and what catches my eye first is the flame. Leaning to the side as though it's blown by the wind, it's a deep royal blue.
Blue is the color of the horizon. Blue is the color of the sky. And it's things that are intangible that we can't actually ever physically touch. And the hottest part of a flame is blue, right?
What was your original goal in creating this sculpture?
I just wanted to make something in the height of 2020, like, you know, everything was reeling.
After the World Health Organization today declared the coronavirus a global pandemic.
Fast-breaking developments in the coronavirus emergency in the U.S. and around the world.
We're deep in early days of the pandemic, right? Nobody had any real information or answers.
The coronavirus forcing millions more Americans into virtual lockdown.
Nationwide, the virus has prompted more than 1,500 schools to close.
The number of cases soaring just today. More than 24,000 now nationwide.
Everybody's scared. People are dropping dead.
For many, the death of George Floyd only piling on.
George Floyd had been murdered. Breonna Taylor had been murdered before that. And Ahmaud Arbery.
Chants of Black Lives Matter echoed from thousands of protesters in cities around the world.
In Paris, they marched, as they did in Rome and Tokyo.
2020 drew attention to structural inequalities that had always been part of American society, but with the pandemic and killings of Black Americans at the hands of police, became more visible and visceral to all Americans.
It was an interesting moment to see, you know, how people had to be hurting, like everyone's life changed and affected in order to have empathy for the Black liberation struggle that has never stopped, that is continually ongoing. And the fact that you could have contracted COVID and died in the face of that, I think, is incredibly powerful and meaningful. But that was like the climate in which I'm like thinking about, how do I make a public sculpture?
People everywhere, from New York to London to Beirut, gathered.
Black Lives Matter, a powerful new international rallying cry.
In June 2020, Abigail DeVille was invited to create a public sculpture for Madison Square Park in New York City. While doing some archival research, she came across a photo of the park with the Statue of Liberty's torch plunked right there in the middle of it. It was installed there from 1876 to 1882, while funds were being raised for the statue's pedestal.
So I just thought that that was just like the perfect thing. Like, history already did it for me. I don't need to look any further.
And so Abigail DeVille took a symbol of the American freedom we hold high for the world to admire and created it anew.
There was just so much color and texture. It holds so much information as an object. And you can sort of start to piece together all of these elements, I think. It becomes a puzzle, and each element is, you know, is very intentional.
Take the torch's flame, for example. Remember, it's blue. But as you get closer to the sculpture, you see it's actually made up of blue mannequin arms. So why arms? Why not like legs or torsos or...
You think of your arm or your hand specifically as being tools. Thinking about the ways in which people like linked arms in protests last summer. Thinking about like outstretching your arms towards something, right?
The arms all seem to tangle together, reaching upward.
There are some hands that it's like you can see the fingers silhouetted against the sky.
Clamoring or reaching out to something unknown, but trying to grasp it anyway, right? Like I feel like the definition of freedom is abstract and we don't really know what it means. We only know when we see it, it's opposite, right? Like we know what is, you know,
we know what it's not.
What it's not.
The handle of the torch is made out of welded steel bars, so you can see into it. And inside, you can just make out a rusty metal bell, dangling silent.
Tell me about the bell.
It's specifically a decommissioned school bell that I got from someone on eBay from a small town in Illinois. So it actually did used to call children to order, you know.
DeVille frequently uses found materials and repurposes them in her art to deliver a message. In this case, about the role of public education. Abigail, who attended public school herself, knows firsthand the significance of a really great teacher.
The best teachers are the ones that are the most loving, right? And they want to see you, like, you know, thrive in the world. But they're charged with a responsibility to let you know about all of the things that are in play in the society that you're about to enter into, right?
In fourth grade, she got a teacher who would permanently change the way she saw the world.
Miss Hammond, oh, I loved her. She played the Martin Luther King I Have a Dream speech for us, and she had a record player in the classroom. She played the record for us, and it was 9-year-olds. You could hear a pin drop in that classroom.
Live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be...
And his voice was like suspended over all of us, you know, and I was holding my best friend's hand under the desk, right? Like, I felt his words were speaking to me specifically, like when he talks about his children. As a 9-year-old, I thought he was speaking straight to me.
People will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream...
There were many instances where she made history come alive for me, and I think because she planted that seed, I was able to start questioning, like, the very next year in fifth grade, the ways American history was being presented to me that I didn't appreciate, and I knew that there was information that was missing. Because I just remember the ways in which, like, Indigenous history was a speed bump, or, you know, like slavery was a speed bump.
When you say a speed bump, you mean like something that you kind of cover
in a... Glossed over,
yeah, it's like,
right. It was like a paragraph on a page and a whole chapter in a unit. You know what I mean? It wasn't anything in depth. It was nothing. And feeling like, or knowing that in a strange way, because I don't know how much you really know at 9, but I felt it like in my gut, that I was a descendant of these people. I want to hear more about these people.
There's a final element of the sculpture that I haven't mentioned yet, but it might be the most important. The entire torch, the handle, the bell, the flame, is surrounded by construction scaffolding. Metal poles anchored in cement blocks with wooden planks laid across. It's so realistic that when I first saw it, I just assumed the installation wasn't complete yet. And that's intentional.
She has rendered this emblem of freedom as a construction site, as a work in progress.
Talking with people at the opening ceremony, the symbolism comes through as loud and clear as the go-go music in the background.
I like that it's under scaffolding to show that we have to work hard towards freedom and that freedom isn't given, that you have to constantly work at it. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, unfinished and not perfect for everyone.
Right.
Still waiting for liberty and justice for all.
Right.
The scaffolding reminds us that even though the Statue of Liberty was built over a century ago, we're still working to build the society that lives up to the ideals it stands for. Or at least, what it stands for today. Because even the national icons that have been around for so long, it feels like they've always been there. They were each constructed with a specific purpose and a certain meaning in mind. But over time, that meaning can change. And in fact, the Lady Liberty who holds her torch alight in New York Harbor today has come to stand for something completely different from the sculptor's original intention. Coming up after the break, the undertold story of the Statue of Liberty and how Abigail Deville asks us to re-examine the histories we've inherited as a nation through visual art.
Support for Smithsonian Side Door comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it. Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/sidedoor. That's odoo.com/sidedoor.
If you ask most people today about the Statue of Liberty, they'll probably tell you it stands for the freedom promised to immigrants who journeyed to America from faraway lands. But today's interpretation has very little in common with the statue's original purpose. It all started back in France in 1865 with a French guy called Édouard de Laboulaye. Édouard was a writer, thinker, and abolitionist. In fact, he was the head of the French Anti-Slavery Society. He was a big fan of American democracy, and when the Civil War brought an end to slavery in the United States, he wanted to send a gift to the U.S. on behalf of France to celebrate this monumental achievement. So the gift, it had to be big. And the French government was on board. See, at that point, nobody really knew what the future of the young country would be. But after helping the American rebels fight the British, the French wanted to make sure the U.S. kind of remembered who its buddies were.
France is like, yeah, we're friends. Don't you forget it. You know, we're giving you this thing. But it was also really just an artist, like, wanting to make a project and then figuring out how to get it done.
The artist, or artiste, was a young French sculptor called Frédéric Bartholdi. He was keen to try making something really big, a giant sculpture, after visiting Egypt and being inspired by what he saw there. So he proposed a lighthouse for the Suez Canal in the shape of a woman holding up a lantern to light the way. But that project fell through. So when abolitionist Édouard de Laboulaye came to him like, hey, want to help design a gift for the Americans to celebrate emancipation? He said, mais oui. And I have just the thing. And he dusted off his old lighthouse drawings and turned this Egyptian beacon into a sketch of Libertas, the Roman goddess of freedom.
But that's the other thing that I think is really interesting is that the United States, it's like core mythology is that it has this idea of like liberty or like libertas, right? Like using this Roman goddess to exude like American ideals of liberty. But libertas, she freed slaves in Roman society, and she was the goddess that freed slaves.
Libertas was the personification of liberty. She's traditionally portrayed holding broken shackles and wearing a felt cap, which in Roman society was given to an enslaved person when they were freed. So when Bartholdi traveled to the U.S. with an early model of his gift for America, she looked a lot like that.
And it got reframed, repackaged. I mean, the iconography is there. It's just been, like, watered down.
In an America that was trying to unify post-Civil War, a statuesque reminder of the thing that had split the country apart was a hard sell. So Lady Liberty got a makeover. Instead of a felt cap, she wore a crown. And the broken chains...
originally, I think it was in her hand in one of the early drawings.
But in the finished version, the chains peek out from beneath her foot. So basically, it's invisible unless you're in a helicopter. What you can see from almost any angle is her torch and the tablet inscribed with the year 1776. By the time the statue was ready, in 1886, the U.S. had just celebrated 100 years as a country. The American Civil War was already 20 years in the past, and leaders wanted to leave it there. In the post-war Reconstruction, slavery was replaced by discriminatory Jim Crow laws across the South, and liberty still felt so far out of reach for most African Americans that when the statue took its place in New York Harbor, the African American newspaper, the Cleveland Gazette, printed an op-ed that read,
"Shove the Bartholdi statue, torch and all, into the ocean until the liberty of this country is such as to make it possible for an inoffensive and industrious colored man in the South to earn a respectable living for himself and family without being Ku Kluxed, perhaps murdered, his daughter and wife outraged, and his property destroyed."
The Statue of Liberty went from a celebration of the abolition of slavery to a bitter reminder of where Black Americans would stand in this post-slavery nation, at the bottom of a hierarchical society. In the 20th century, Lady Liberty would become a beacon welcoming immigrants to America, European immigrants, that is, who, within a generation or two, would be considered white.
I think, like, thinking back to, like, the Black experience in America, the ways in which, I think Toni Morrison has a really beautiful quote about the melting pot.
It was always a bottom that you could be hostile to. And that was useful in bringing the country together into the melting pot.
This is author Toni Morrison in her documentary, The Pieces I Am.
What was the basis, the cauldron, the pot, melting pot? Well, Black people were the pot. And everything else was, you know, melted together. And what? American.
Abigail DeVille's Light of Freedom takes the essence of the Statue of Liberty and reimagines it through a modern lens. She takes what's immediately recognizable at first glance, the torch, and says, look again, look closer, and do it right here on the National Mall.
The National Mall, you know, it's this great symbolic field where all of these icons and emblems of American power live. And a place that emblematizes the stories of American history as they have more traditionally been told.
Curator Ann Reeve says Light of Freedom, with its blue arms, its bell that doesn't ring, and its scaffolding, is a reminder that the more people we have telling the story, the clearer a picture we get.
And, you know, and it's a reminder to look at the stories that we've been told in school and through history, at the stories of the founding of our nation, the stories that we like to tell ourselves about American ideals and American liberty, because the way that those stories are told often leaves a lot out. You know, to me, this object sort of insists that we acknowledge that gap.
Anne says that's the power of contemporary art, to help us see differently.
You know, the work of artists reflects the world in which they're living and making work. And you know, I think they're offering us ways to see.
What is the role of an artist? Like, what does it mean to you to be an artist?
Well, for me, I always think about the James Baldwin creative process essay from 1962 and where he ends it with talking about that the role of an artist with his society is a lover's war.
Baldwin writes, societies never know it, but the war of an artist with his society is a lover's war. And he does at his best what lovers do, which is to reveal the beloved to himself. And with that revelation, to make freedom real.
I'm always thinking about love, right? And then if you love someone, then you're not actively lying to them. right? Or you're trying to uncover some kind of deeper truth.
I love that framing because right. I think sometimes, you know, you can look at artwork that's critical of society and think like, oh, you know, throwing stones at the institutions or something like that. But really it comes from closeness, intimacy. There's like a tenderness there. It's almost like your duty to hold the mirror up to the thing that you...
That made you.
Yeah.
It made you. It framed your world. It's like the heavens and the earth, right? Like it's the ground you walk on. It's the air you breathe. You didn't have any choice. You were born. You didn't ask to be. But maybe you should be asking questions about, you know, the world and why it is the way it is specifically around you. And you can start with your family and your neighborhood, your community, you know, institutions that you're a part of. I think we should be questioning everything.
You've been listening to Side Door, a podcast from the Smithsonian with support from PRX. You can see Light of Freedom at the Hirshhorn Sculpture Garden from now until April 2022. And if you can get to DC, I recommend it. For more on the work of Abigail DeVille, including photos from the opening celebration, Wake Up, Liberation Call at Dawn, subscribe to our newsletter. We'll also include more information about the performers you heard, soloist Jadel McPherson, West African percussion group Farafina Khan, and DC's own go-go band, The Jogo Project. You can subscribe to the newsletter at si.edu/sidedoor. Special thanks this episode to curator Mary Elliott at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture for her support with historical research, as well as to Fleur Pessoir. Thanks also to historian Tyler Stovall for his behind-the-scenes help uncovering the history of the Statue of Liberty's iconography. Thanks to our friends at the Hirshhorn Museum and Sculpture Garden for making this episode happen. Anne Reeve, Kate Gibbs, Amy Baer, and Maddie Feller. Thanks also to the Madison Square Park Conservancy. And of course, big thanks to Abigail DeVille for taking the time to speak with us about her work. Our podcast team is James Morrison, Natalie Boyd, Anne Kananen, Caitlin Schaefer, Tammy O'Neill, Jess Sadek, Lara Koch, and Sharon Bryant. Episode artwork is by Dave Leonard. Extra support comes from Jason and Genevieve at PRX. Our show is mixed by Tarek Fuda. Our theme song and episode music are by Breakmaster Cylinder. If you want to sponsor our show, please visit sponsorship@prx.org. I'm your host, Lizzie Peabody. Thanks for listening. I also had a fourth grade teacher who, she just was like the grown-up that we knew would tell us the truth.
Yes.
And like we all got together one day and we just like sat her down and we were like, Mrs. Winstead, is God real? And this was public school, so she's like looking up at the speakers to be like, who's listening in on this conversation?
Just trying to get fun. That's hilarious.
But she could not answer our questions, so she kind of got real, we were on the ground, she like got real low, and she, her voice got so quiet, and we were thinking like, wow, God must be dangerous. Like, this is, she, like, what is going on? And she basically told us that, you know, nobody knows. So then, but because she said it, like, we believed it. Okay, if Miss Winston doesn't know if there's God, then really nobody knows if there is a God. So anyway, yeah, fourth grade teachers, that is
that's
an amazing,
an important moment, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. From PRX.